Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the November 26th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Arthur Village Board. Approved sale of Meadowview Lot by Arianna Cherry. The trustees of the Arthur Village Board approved the ordinance authorizing the sale of lots 16 and 17 in the Meadowview subdivision following an offer of $40,000 at their most recent meeting held on Monday, November 17th. The lots were appraised at $25,500. The purchaser acknowledged a storm drain easement at the rear of one lot and existing setback requirements of 5 feet on the sides and 20 feet on the front. The buyer also requested confirmation that the remaining lots along Beach Street would not be used for multifamily housing. Board members noted that Lot 14 had previously been zoned for multifamily use as part of the Legacy of Love project, but no additional multifamily development is planned in the current phase. Sherry Stewart of American Central Insurance Services presented information on a proposed level-funded health insurance plan for village employees. The plan would function similar to the current coverage with no changes to provider access. Network options would continue to include Christie, Carl, Sarah Bush, DMH, and HSHS. Under a level-funded plan, premiums are divided into three components: administrative costs for the processing and broker fees, claim fund for routine medical expenses, stop-loss insurance to protect against high-cost claims. At the end of the year, if money remains in the claims bucket may receive a surplus refund, typically issued about 6 months after the plan closes. Renewal rates are based on the village's actual claims experience rather than standard fully insured increases. The village's current renewal increase is approximately 13%. The level funded option presented is estimated to be about 5% below current rates, with minimal downside since the group is under 50 employees and may return to fully insured coverage if needed. Deductible and out-of-pocket options were also reviewed, including a decrease of the individual out-of-pocket maximum from $6,300 to $5,000. Open enrollment is expected in December, with final clarification still pending regarding surplus payout procedures. Following discussion and questions, trustees approved a motion to move forward with a level-funded health insurance plan. Other items voted or approved: approved expenditures for $86,400. Rural Patriot LLC requested $7,700 toward improvement at 119 South Vine Street as part of an ongoing four-phase renovation. Proposed work includes repairing stucco and extending mural artwork toward the alley. After scoring the project under TIF construction guidelines, trustees noted that while the improvements enhance aesthetics and support building reuse, the request did not meet several eligibility criteria, including code upgrades and job creation. The board recommended resubmission under the Facade Grant Program, which provides a 50% match up to $10,000. Upon receipt of updated paperwork, trustees indicated they would approve the request under that program. Approve three temporary TIF capital improvement grants. An ordinance approving the 2025-26 tax levy was passed with an increase below the 5% threshold requiring a truth in taxation hearing. They approved the purchase of a KAGE Innovation Snowstorm, a 14-foot plow pusher combination for the Case wheel loader for $21,500. Approved proposal from the CorPro for inspection of the water tower's cathodic protection system in 2026 for $1,700. The next article, Arthur School Board approved building options tentative levy by Arianna Cherry. At its November 19th meeting, the Arthur School Board received updates on the district's ongoing high school building project, including a review of three potential design options that will soon require board direction. Representatives from BLDD Architects and CORE Construction, architect Damien Schlitt and construction manager Brett Steffen, attended the meeting to share progress on planning the new high school facility. After a two-day feedback process involving teachers and students, three building options were presented, ranging from approximately 48,000 to 58,000 square feet. While the layouts differ, all three prioritized creating spaces that support instruction, collaboration, and small group learning. Schlitt emphasized that although the district previously qualified for replacement funding based on a 60,000 square foot calculation, the goal is not to shrink instructional space. Staff and students overwhelmingly expressed a preference for multiple flexible learning areas such as a breakout room, media-rich zones, rather than one large multi-purpose room. Schlitt noted that reducing classroom space further would limit future capacity and require additional course sections later. The board plans to meet in early December to select which option BLDD and CORE should develop into formal designs and bid packages. Steffen explained that early direction is necessary to secure long lead to construction items such as structural steel, precast concrete, which can take up to a year to procure. While crews are confident in the overall construction timeline, he stressed that detailed planning will help prevent delays once construction begins. Discussion also touched on the temporary use of existing spaces during construction. The former weight room may receive limited short-term upgrades, such as accessibility improvements and the fire alarm updates, to allow safe use until the new facility is completed. Renovations to the existing gym and certain HVAC systems are expected, but may be scheduled during the summer months or bid as alternates depending on the cost and priority. As planning continues, board members will receive additional recommendations, cost estimates, and options for the items that could be deferred or added later. District leaders expressed growing optimism about moving closer to a facility that better meets both current and future student needs. Superintendent Shannon Cheek presented the 2025-2026 tentative tax levy to the board. The proposed aggregate levy is currently set to 10.27%, which will require a truth in taxation hearing. Cheek clarified that this does not mean taxes will increase by 10.27%. Increases in assessed valuation offsets increases in the tax rate. In the proposed levy, the aggregate tax rate will rise from 3.35 to 3.38. Including the Health Life Safety Building Replacement Bond, the total increase will range from 3.47 to 3.98. The board approved the tentative tax levy with the truth in taxation hearing scheduled for the next board meeting in December. Other board items discussed and voted on are donations. Four donations totaling $3,200 were approved to support students and programs. $1,900 from the Arthur Rotary for washer and dryer at AGS. $1,000 from the Arthur Mennonite Church for student supplies. $10 from Jan Lamoule for Veterans Day program at AHGS. $333 from Arthur Rotary from the Kenny Vento program at the high school. Treasurer's report, October 25, 2025, reports show totaling funds of $19,233,000 with a bank statement balance of $3,262,000. Education fund balance of $11,867,000, building fund $3,197,000, transportation fund $177,000. Track naming proposal. Alumni and Arthur resident Jason Yackel informed the board of his plans to nominate Don and Sally McCarthy for naming of the athletic track at ALAH in honor of their years of service in the district and Knights Athletics. The proposed name is the Don and Sally McCarthy Athletic Track Field. A petition is required, 500 signatures, with at least 75% of Arthur CUSD 305 votes and no more than 25% from alumni living outside of the district. Personnel report, November 19, 2025, certified, non-certified staff. Approved letter of resignation for Jessica Garza as the pre-K aide at AGS. Approved Aliga Ramey as pre-K aide at AGS, replacing Garza. Approved a leave of absence request from non-certified staff member. Extracurricular, approved Dave Meyer as Scholastic Bowl coach at LGS. Approved Chris Kessler as 6th through 12th department chair. Approved letter of resignation from Bradley Rex Road as bass fishing coach. The next article, Beck Named Principal of the Year by Nolan Morse. Villa Grove principal Bobby Beck has been awarded the Illini Regents Elementary School Principal of the Year by the Illinois Principals Association. Criteria for the award include a principal's impact on education, their advocacy for children, their ability to foster high staff and student morale, their creativity in driving positive change, and their involvement in the community and the school life. Beck is one of four Central Illinois administrators recognized by the associations. Others to be recognized include Lindsay Pruckard of Bismarck Henning Junior High School for Junior High Principal of the Year, Kevin Thomas of Georgetown Ridge Farm High School for High School Principal of the Year, and Nicole Johnson of Oakwood Grade School for Assistant Principal of the Year. Beck is in his 10th year as principal at Villa Grove Grade School. He previously served as kindergarten and fourth grade teacher and as dean of students. The Atwood Hammond graduate is married to Aaron Beck, who is an attendance specialist at the Regional Office of Education. They have three children, Parker, Layla, and Sayla, and a dachshund named Gertie. The Chronicle will have more on this story next week. The next article, Arcola's Clamaco earns recognition. Arcola's Ime Clamaco was honored twice recently by her church and community. She was chosen as St. John the Baptist Catholic Church 2025 Woman of Distinction and was honored during a Mass at the Immaculate Conception Cathedral June 21st. The honor included a luncheon banquet at the Crown Center. In this photo, Clamaco is pictured with Bishop John Thomas Paprocki of the Springfield Diocese. In the right photo, Clamaco is pictured with Arcola Mayor Luis Garza and City Administrator Bill Wagoner. The city placed a plaque in her honor of her work within the community. The plaque reads, "In honor of Aimée Clamico, Aimée Clamico devoted her time and heart to the city of Arcola, demonstrating an unwavering commitment to the beauty, connection, and well-being of our community. Through her quiet dedication, she has helped shape public spaces that offer peace, reflection, and joy, places that now stand as meaningful landmarks throughout our town. Every bench placed and every stone set by her hand reflects the love she held for this city and its people. Her lasting contributions continue to enrich lives and inspire service, and for that, the city of Arcola expresses its deepest gratitude." And the final first page story, Villa Grove man faces attempted murder charge by Nolan Royce. A Villa Grove man was arrested and charged with first-degree murder following an attempted machete stabbing at a mobile home park. Around 6:30 p.m. Wednesday, November 19th, Villa Grove Police Department dispatched to a 20 Perks trailer court, a mobile home park located in the northeast section of Villa Grove. On the scene, police found an injured person who remained hospitalized until Thursday morning. Police later identified the suspect as Christian Escobar, who was deemed armed and dangerous by a warning post sent out by the city of Villa Grove early Thursday morning. At 7:49 a.m., Villa Grove Fire and Rescue had reported Escobar was taken into custody. He was charged with one count of attempted murder, a Class X felony, one count of aggravated battery, a Class 3 felony. Escobar remains in the Douglas County Jail. The investigation is ongoing. Court records show that Escobar was arrested in May and pleaded guilty to criminal damage to property. Fines and fees total $1,000. We'll move now to the obituaries. Judith Karen Robinson Schaefer, age 84 of Jewett, formerly of Cerro Gordo, passed away on Wednesday, November 12, 2025. Funeral services were held Saturday, November 15th at Jewett Community Church, Jewett, with Pastor Shane Peters officiating. Visitation also was Saturday, November 15th at the Jewett Community Church. Burial was in the Jewett Cemetery directly following the service. The Barclay Funeral Group and Greenup assisted the family with arrangements. Travis Lee Whitmore, 37, of Hunsboro, passed away at 1:47 p.m. on Tuesday, November 18, 2025, at his residence. Visitation was held Saturday, November 22nd, at the Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. Funeral services were Saturday at the funeral home. Pastor Aaron Booth officiated. Burial will be at a later date in the Arcola Cemetery. Mark Edward Jacobs, 66, of Arcola, passed away on Sunday evening, November 16, 2025, at St. Louis University Hospital in St. Louis, Missouri. Massive Christian burial be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, November 25th at 40 Martyrs Catholic Church, 201 East Van Allen Street, Tuscola, with Father Michael Trummer as the officiant. Burial will follow at the Lewis Cemetery, rural Tuscola. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Monday, November 24th at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home, 705 South Main Street in Tuscola. The next article, Arthur to host Candy Lane Wonderland Celebration and Lighted Christmas Parade. Arthur will transform into a festive holiday destination as the community presents Arthur's Candy Lane Wonderland on Saturday, December 6th, featuring a full day of events, local vendors, family activities, and the always popular lighted Christmas parade. The day starts with breakfast with Santa at Yoder's Kitchen. From 8 to 10 a.m., donuts, coffee, and milk will be served. Craft and coloring tables for the kids to enjoy, sponsored by Master Brand. Events downtown will start with a 5K Elf Fun Run and Kids Candy Cane Chaser beginning at 9 a.m. Registration will take place from 8:48 to 8:45 a.m. at the Knights Court. Proceeds benefit the ALAH Cross Country Team. This is a non-time community fun run. Prizes will be awarded to the best dressed, encouraging participants to wear the most festive holiday attire. For more information, contact us, Austin Romine, at romine@cusd305.org. The official Candy Cane Wonderland kickoff and the opening of the Hot Chocolate Trail starts at 10 a.m. Throughout the day, families can enjoy a variety of themed activities, including a popcorn bar, tinsel troop photo ops, cookie decorating, carriage rides, pictures with Santa, and tattoo art with the ALAH Junior High cheerleaders. Children can enjoy free activities from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., including slime and make and take, coloring board, ornament making, gingerbread and snow globe bounce houses. Knights Court will host a festive marketplace featuring local artisans and holiday crafts. Featured vendors include Macy's Munchies, Crunchy Cravings, Frenchie's Boutique, handcrafted by H. Rhonda Trees, McKenna Blaudow, Colette's Candles, and Mimi's Mini and more. Food vendors to date include Polly's Barbecue, Sweet Vale Cafe with coffees, teas, donuts, and pastries, Russell's Old Time Concessions, and Bavarian Nuts and Kettle Corn. Shoppers can enjoy warm treats, handmade gifts, and unique holiday finds while exploring the downtown area. The Candy Cane Wonderland Lighted Christmas Parade will step off promptly at 5:30 p.m., with lineup starting at 4:30 p.m. along Lincoln Street on the south side of the Arthur Grade School. Parade awards include the best decorated golf cart, the best candy cane themed float. If you can put lights on it, come join the fun. Organizers encourage all community members, clubs, and businesses to participate. Contact Stephanie Weirman at 217-620-7460 to enter or for more information. Immediately following the parade, the community will gather for the tree lighting ceremony at the Welcome Center, 106 East Progress Street, along with Santa's Storytime, Cookies, and Milk. The evening concludes with a cozy s'mores bar at 7 p.m. at the gazebo parking lot. Come out and celebrate the season that includes a full day of holiday magic with festive shopping, community activities, delicious food, and the spectacular lighted parade. Arthur's Candy Cane Wonderland promises a day filled with holiday spirits for families and visitors of all ages. For more information, contact the Arthur Welcome Center at 217-542-2242. The next article, Arcola's Got Talent by Nancy Reardon. The Arcola High School Drama Club hosted a fall talent show on Sunday, November 16th, as a fundraiser to help support the production of their spring play. Students from elementary through 12th grade performed a variety of acts, from singing and dancing to playing instruments and performing comedy routines. A few members of the administration and staff also joined in on the fun. The fan favorites were chosen by voting at the end of the show. Taking top honors for the elementary school division was Ivy Raymond, who played the tune Played the Piano. For the junior-senior high division, the trophy went to Caroline Torres, along with her coach, Jill Raymond, who performed a flag dance routine. The next article is from the Douglas County Architect Agriculture by Larry Dallas. Preparation already started for next year. The last cornfields are disappearing in Douglas County. I don't know if there are any soybeans left to cut. After a lull for warm weather, the nitrogen bars are running again. We have excellent conditions to finish the 2025 crop year and begin the preparations for the next go-around. The dry weather made it difficult to establish crops in wheat fields. Part of our cover crop looks good. A couple of others seem very thin and streaky. We would like to have seen more growth of the cover crops before freezing weather stops progress. We did not plant any, but popular cover seed crop, annual rye, will grow despite cold temperatures. It seems that if it's above freezing, rye will sprout and grow. In early November, I attended the University of Illinois Extension sponsored a conference about the nutrient loss reduction strategy. This is the initiative by agriculture to reduce nitrogen and phosphorus in surface water. There were several good presentations. Agriculture has made substantial progress in reducing the nutrients in the surface water. Cover crops, careful and timely application of fertilizer, and changes in tillage practices are keeping the nutrients we made to grow crops in place. Much of the research I heard about is funded on the university level by farmers. We pay a dollar per ton checkoff on the fertilizer we buy. These dollars are used to fund research on fertilizer application, nutrient loss, cover crops, and cropping strategies. The goal is peer-reviewed research that will help us use fertilizer more efficiently and keep it in our fields. If you watch the legal notices in local papers, you will have seen that the drainage districts are holding their annual meeting. These must be completed by the end of November. Most of Douglas County is organized into drainage districts that oversee the drain tile and also the surface ditches that remove excess water and make this former swamp farmable. The largest district I know of is over 19,000 acres in two counties. Drainage districts usually have three commissioners. These serve with little or no compensation. They volunteer their time to make sure the district's tiles are in good repair. When a farmer finds a tile hole in the field, the first call is usually to the drainage district commissioner to see if the hole is on district tile and therefore responsibility of the district. Most districts maintain a large main tiles to give each landowner an outlet for the small tile that they install. In the annual meeting, there are legal requirements to satisfy since drainage districts are taxing bodies. The commissioners will discuss any large projects that should be undertaken. We are fortunate in this area because our ancestors had the foresight to install tile mains in much of the county. Many of the old tile mains are 100 years old and are beginning to break down and fail. They may also be undersized for the pattern tile farmers install now. 100 years ago, a field might have only a few hand-dug tile runs to the worst wet holes, not a complete system. These mains can be extremely expensive to replace. The commissioners will set the tax levy for the coming year per acre tax to generate dollars for repairs needed. Since the commissioners are landowners in the district, these levies are carefully considered. A large project might require the district to borrow money to be repaid as future tax dollars come into the district accounts. One of the districts I've been a commissioner on for many years is administered out of is Champaign County. We will have no new dollars to work with this year. in that district. The Champaign County Clerk's Office failed to get the levies that that county district had set added to the real estate tax bills. They further failed to send the levies to the Douglas County part of our district to the Douglas County Clerk. We were also left out in an attempt to correct this mistake. This will put a real strain on our efforts to maintain good drainage in the coming year. The grain markets have at last shown some life. Soybeans are about 90 cents off their lows. This move is mostly on trade deal news. Corn prices have gone up since harvest finishes, and that glut of corn starts through the system. Prices continue to move up or down based on tariffs and other news. The grain trade operated in the dark during the government shutdown. None of the myriad of reports that come out of Washington were being issued. The U.S. Department of Agriculture did not issue an October crop report, but it did issue a catch-up report November 14th. The grain trade expected lower corn and soybean yields. Both were slightly lower, but a record corn crop is still predicted based on the acres planted to corn. Prices fell hard after the report was issued. I'm waiting to see what trade will be on Monday, November 16th. A follow-through lower price would not be good for short-term prospects. The president made what most in agriculture consider an ill-timed reference to lowering beef prices by importing more meat from South America. This caused sharp losses in the cattle market over the last 2 weeks. It did not change the retail price of beef. As a former raiser of hogs, I would like to say to buy hogs if you think beef is too high. They're very reasonably priced right now. It is not a good policy to subvert the signals of supply and demand in this way. High feed cattle prices will encourage farmers and ranchers to retain females to breed and produce calves to feed out. A cow bred in December 1, 2025 will not calve until early September 2026. That calf would not be slaughtered for meat for another year. Increasing the beef supply is a long-term project. The farmer foregoes the income from selling that female to feed her another 10 months in hopes that she produces a calf to feed or sell. The aging of the farm population will also enter this. A 70-year-old rancher might not plan to keep raising cattle for another 2 to 3 years to see if the added income and might not have anyone willing to come on board to continue the operation. Because of the inflation of the past few years, we may not see what we consider cheap beef again. It will be a lower price at some point. That is how supply and demand works. We have been cleaning and putting equipment away, fixing tile holes we found during the harvest, and cutting brush. We applied most of the nitrogen we wanted to this fall, in contrast to last year when we were able to put only a couple of fields before the weather turned wet. We have the price of input locked in. We begin to process the results of this year to make firm plans for the next. Thank you for reading about Douglas County agriculture this month. The next article, Lovington Women Working Women's Collective, presents Christmas in the Park November 29th. The Lovington Working Women's Collective annual Christmas in the Park event takes place on Saturday, November 29th from 3 to 5 p.m. at Tom Conn Park in Lovington, with an afternoon filled with festive cheer, community spirit, and magical moments for all ages. Experience the wonder as Tom Conn Park transforms into a sparkling winter wonderland illuminated by beautiful Christmas lights and dazzling displays. Each display is generously donated by local businesses and community members, with every contribution proudly showcased with a sign bearing the donor's name, celebrating the spirit of giving that makes Lovington shine. Don't miss Santa Claus's grand entrance by fire truck at 3:15 p.m., a truly magical moment for kids and adults alike. The Grinch will also make a special appearance, delighting attendees with a reading of his classic tale, How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Children can get creative at the Moultrie Douglas Modo Mavericks 4-H Club table, where we'll have a chance to make reindeer food to take home. While you're enjoying the festivities, warm up with a treat from Magoody's Mobile Coffee Truck, which will be serving an official Christmas menu throughout the event. This event is free and open to the public. Bring your family, friends, and holiday spirits to celebrate the season with Lovington community. Lovington is proud to be one of the rural communities participating in the Great Inflatable Christmas Trail. We encourage you to take a drive around Lovington and see if you can find all the gingerbread inflatables spread throughout the town. The next article is The Meaninglessness of Today's Favored Catchphrase is What Makes It Fun by Ramblin' Man Dave Porter. I was trying to come up with an idea to write about this week, and I came up with the 6-7 things. 6-7, that's the catchphrase for the moment that is driving the grown-ups nuts. Math teachers are avoiding the number combination. The animated TV series South Park did an episode on the phenomenon. Dictionary.com declared 6-7 to be the word of the year. 6-7, that's how it works. Anytime someone uses the two numbers, the kids repeat themselves in unison. But you can't just say 6-7 like normal or 6-7 as a group. You draw out the first syllable of the word 7, usually while lifting your hands alternatively as if you're weighing your options. Why? No reason. It doesn't mean anything. It started out as a lyric in a rap song, and the artist, whose name I don't recall and I don't care to look up, has said that he didn't attach any meaning to it at all. Kids latched onto it and find senseless humor in it. The grown-ups don't know what it means, and that adds to the humor for the kids. It's the incoherent lyrics in the song of Louie Louie in the 1960s. Parents were so freaked out that the FBI conducted an actual investigation into the possible code. Turned out the band had recorded the song under subprime conditions, causing the lyrics to become garbled. The fact that parents were horrified helped propel the song. Every generation seems to find a way to needle the generation that came before them. Using numbers to do it isn't new, except when we were kids. The numbers usually had some meaning attached to them. They were euphemism for drugs or sex or some other naughtiness. The fact that 6, 7 has no meaning is kind of brilliant. If a parent decodes the number, there's nothing there with which to punish the kids. It's just part of slang culture. You can get away with generalization and fine words and phrases, even dance moves that help kids create bonds with each other and divisions with their elders. That was what's gnarly for Gen X, lit for Gen Z, and far out for boomers. For Gen Alpha, as today's kids are called, it's 6, 7. Should we be concerned about their chosen fad? It has no meaning? Nah, it's just totally tubular. Take a chill pill. The next article, The Things I'm Thankful Are Mostly People, Hook, Line, and Sinker by Tony Hooker. A long time ago, my pops told me something I really didn't understand. He said that hours and days will pass by slowly, but the years will fly by like the wind. Now I know exactly what he meant. It's almost unfathomable to me that Thanksgiving is upon us. As is my tradition, I'm compelled to list the things I'm most grateful for. I am incredibly grateful for my lovely wife. Mrs. HLS has been the best thing that ever happened to this old sailor, and I am lucky to have caught her in a weak moment. Along those same lines, I'm thankful for my offspring. They've all turned out to be hardworking, well-adjusted, beautiful humans, and I couldn't be prouder of them. It hasn't always been easy, but they're continuing to persevere. My grandkids are another source of joy for which I'm thankful. I can't believe that my firstborn grandbaby is now in possession of her learner's driving permit. How in the world did that happen? They're all amazing beings, and I can't wait to see their futures unfold. I am thankful for the gift of the Reebster and Donnie B. Many of my friends no longer have the gift of their parents' company, and although I don't see them as often as I should, I'm so glad they're still present. I lean on their knowledge and experiences more than they'll ever know, and I am blessed. I'm also thankful for the employment opportunities, both old and new, that I enjoy. I consider myself lucky to be given an opportunity to serve my fellow man in whatever iteration that may take. I'm thankful for nature. I wasn't able to see the Northern Lights, but through the miracle of social media, I saw many images that my friends had taken. Of course, I can't mention nature without mentioning a tree stand, and next week I'll be able to take a couple of days away from the hustle and get out for a bit. My batteries are in need of nature's recharging. I am thankful that all of my sports teams are at least marginally competent. It's so much funner when there's actual chance that your hero might actually prevail. There have been times in the past when my beloved would take the field, and deep down I knew there was no chance. I am thankful for a good meal, as is obvious to anyone who has seen my prodigious girth in person. I like to eat, for sure, but I enjoy working together with Jules to prepare the feast of much, if not more, than actual consumption of the victuals themselves. I am thankful for Father Trummer. Under his patient tutelage, I become more intentional when it comes to my relationship with God. I've got a long way to go, but this old sinner is making progress one day at a time. Finally, dear reader, I'm thankful to be given the opportunity to bring words to print each week, and I'm especially grateful to you for reading these words. It's an awesome feeling when someone tells you they've enjoyed something you've written. Thank you, and I hope you have a blessed and joyous Thanksgiving. And we have time for a few briefs. Christmas Bazaar, Saturday, December 6th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., and Sunday, December 7th from 1 to 4 p.m., the Camargo United Methodist Women are hosting a Christmas bazaar with decorated trees and nativities in the church's parsonage, 104 Mill Street, Camargo. There will also be a bake sale, grave and cemetery saddles, cones, and assorted nuts. Arthur Black Friday. Don't forget the Black Friday shopping event in Arthur on all 6 County Lane stores. Vendors events at Auto Center, 7 participating downtown Arthur shops, Randall's Home and Furnishing, Arthur's MCC Thrift Shop, Yoder's Kitchen, and Legacy Building Supply on Route 133. Special sales will be extended hours on Friday, November 28th. Eat, shop, and spend local this holiday season. Remember, Small Business Saturday is November 29th. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes saying goodbye, and see you again next week.